All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in for another episode of the Barabbas and Rice Show. And today we are starting a new series, the Freedom and Liberty series. We're going to be talking about everything related to freedom and liberty, of course. And so we wanted to kind of go over, we've been talking about legal fiction and corporate entities and corporate uses per se. And so we wanted to kind of go over what we have found in our research, share that with you, and also hope that you watching this, if there's any information you can provide to help fill in the gaps, we definitely want people to participate. And if somebody's got some really good knowledge to bring to the table, we'd like to invite you on the show. So make sure you're commenting down below. In case you don't know, we're doing this on both of our YouTube channels. So if you're watching this on my channel, make sure you're checking out Stan's channel, Bodhisattva Love. If you're watching this on Stan's channel, make sure you're checking out my channel, Rice Crypto. So Stan, how's everything going today, brother?
Going great, man. Going great. And I just kind of want to add to this to make sure before we start this video that we're not claiming to be experts in this field. That's why we're making this video, is to call in people out there and see what you've learned or what you know, any direct experiences. And this way we can help educate each other. We have a lot of what we think we know, but we're not for sure on all this. And, you know, I've been aware of this stuff for quite some time. I kind of brought it forth to Rice's attention, I think, a little bit deeper. And now we're trying to collaborate with people who do claim that they know what they're talking about. And we're trying to get those people together, hopefully in one place, right, Rice?
Yeah, I mean, originally today's video, we were supposed to interview David Strait, but unfortunately things came up on his end and he needs to reschedule. So we figured we would use this time. We were talking last night. We did that video with Eric. We're recording this on Friday the 18th and we're going to release this on Saturday the 19th. So if you didn't catch that live stream that me and Stan did with Eric, definitely check that out. And he'll be joining us in future episodes on this series, because again, this is a collaborative thing. And Stan, I'm glad that you mentioned that we're not experts, because we're not. And what we're trying to do is just share our research and then hope that you can share, you as the viewer watching this can share your research as well, help confirm some of the things that we've looked into and help fill in some other blanks or even bring some things to our attention that we're not aware of. So, I mean, we've been told that this goes all the way back to the times of Babylon and Mesopotamia, and this is a Babylonian based system, but we can fast forward to our timeline, and when we're talking about the AD timeline from Rome. And they said there's a reason they say that all roads lead to Rome, and it kind of seems to be that way, especially in this aspect. So we've learned that Justinian, an emperor in 530 AD, came up with this system called Corpus Iuris Civilis. People know it as Corpus Juris, but there wasn't the J, as we've discovered back then. So, but that either meant body of law or law of the dead. Is that how you've learned it?
I can't remember which one it is, but...
Well, it could be interpreted juris, either way.
Juris means law, right? Right of law. Right, law.
Something to that effect.
And diction just means words.
And corpus is pretty self-explanatory.
Corpus is dead. So.
Or body.
Body.
So that's where body of law or law of the dead could come into play. And what we mean by that is the system of maritime admiralty law. Back then in the times of Rome, and we've learned a lot of this from Justinian Deception. So people definitely check out the channel Justinian Deception, Romilly Stewart, and it's Rohan Lorien is the other gentleman, but Romilly does the majority of the content. And what we've learned is it started for us in that time zone with the Roman Emperor Justinian. And then we could fast forward a little bit to 1230 AD is when the Magna Carta was created, and that was supposed to put man and woman under common law, if I'm not mistaken. And common law, we've learned, is the law of land. Mm-hmm. So law...
That's the L in the law, land.
Yeah, I was about to say, our brains are synchronized. Law, the L, land... A
for air,
and ecclesiastical. That's trust law, ecclesiastical law, biblical law, trust law, is what the agnostic person would call it. they wouldn't use ecclesiastical, but that's what it is. And then your W is for water, which is your Admiralty Maritime Law.
Yep.
So 1280 was the Magna Carta. But then this guy, Accursius, who was a Roman juror, and the juror at the time had a different position to what we would know a juror to be, but he perfected Justinian's Corpus Juris. And that's when a lot of the surnames started coming into play. And we kind of learned from Romilly that the surname, your last name, kind of originated from something they called cognomen names. That's C-O-G-N-O-M-E-N. And it was a nickname that was given, passed down from father to son. And I think a lot of it started out in a military aspect, but then it started kind of filtering out into trades as well. And so that would have been what we would know from the original surname idea. So if somebody's got some more information on that, definitely share. But it was around, somewhere around, I believe, the early 1300s that they started really using surnames, because if you research your family history, at some point, the surnames aren't attached. You start just finding, like, especially if you're part of a royal bloodline and you go back, I mean, like, these guys didn't have last names back in like the 1200s and 1100s and things like that. So that's something that I think is one of the big anchors to all this, is that surname, your family name. And that's what, when people say that we're lost at sea and don't know our names, is because we've taken on this legal fiction name, apparently. Is that how you've understood it?
Yes, exactly. I'm curious what cognomen breaks down to.
If we're going to syntax the word.
Yeah. Cognomen. I mean, nomen definitely sounds like name, right?
I would say so. Not sure what the cog part would be, but it would be Latin. So
cognomen definition, an extra personal name given to an ancient Roman citizen, functioning rather like a nickname and typically passed down from father to son.
And we understand citizen to work very well with the legal fiction system that falls underneath the W in law, with the water, with the Admiralty Maritime Law. I mean, some way the system has gotten distorted where they consider hospitals to be boats on a dry dock. And I mean, that's kind of a hard concept for a lot of people to grasp their head around. And that's one thing that me and Stan have been talking about. Like, is there 100% proof of this legal fiction system? Like, we were both going over our birth certificate information, and we'll come back to that. But what do you know about, because we'll fast forward. We talked about the Justinian Corpus Juris. We talked about the Magna Carta in 1215 AD, then Accursius in 1230. And then we got the Seste KV Act in 1666. I think I have it opened where you can still do a screen share. Do you want to screen share and tell us what you know about the Seste KV Act and, oddly enough, the 1666 AD?
All right. Let's see.
That's a crazy year for that to happen, too. Just when everybody, if you want to think from a conspiracy theorist point of view, it's 1666. It's like, it's definitely making it easy for people to play around with this one. But
yeah, exactly. So if you, as you can see here, this is from legislation.gov.uk, and this is the Seste KV Act of 1666.
And scroll back down real quick. Right below the title, it says Acts of the English Parliament in 1666. So everybody needs to take note that this was an act of Parliament with the royalty, the king at the time, in 1666. It was implemented, and it's never been taken out of effect. Every single royal family that's come into power since has not decreed this to no longer exist. It's actually on the legislation.gov.uk website as an existing act that's still currently in act.
And look at right here. It says changes to legislation in green here. There are currently no known outstanding effects for the Seste KV Act 1666.
Which means they don't contest anything to do with the act. Is that how you would understand that, interpret it?
Basically, it still holds true, whatever it is. It hasn't been any changes or modifications, hasn't been but whatever word you want to use there, redacted or whatever.
So this is chapter 11, 18, and 19. I'm not sure what all that different verbiage is, but we see that that is the. But we're trying to figure out if that's the royal crest of Britain, or is that the actual royal crest of Queen Elizabeth and her family. We're not 100% sure about that.
Well, it's a royal crest regardless. So if it's the British royal crest of English Parliament, then regardless, the part of the story that we're trying to clarify, right, is that we're under British rule, right?
Well,
under the monarchy, right?
Technically speaking, we're not under the SESTA-KB Act here in the United States. We'll fast forward and go into what would be something that would have been somewhat equivalent to what the SESTA-KB Act would have done in a different way. Because we truly are under British monarchy rule, then the SESTA-KB Act would be.
Well, that's where the bankruptcy of 1933 would come in then, right? So that's when we were sold off to the Queen as chattel, as property for a collateral for the debt owed to.
See, I think when they say that the crown took the debt, I don't think that they're referring to the monarchy. I think they're referring to the Crown Incorporated.
Well, either way, if you read
the Crown Incorporated is your central bankers, your Rothschild family, is your City of London. So that's when the bar association, when they're talking about the British Accreditation Registry, it's all dealing with the Crown Incorporated, not. I was confused for a little bit, but they're not like taking loyalty with the British monarch system. They're taking oath to the Crown Incorporated, the City of London.
It, from my perspective, it's all kind of one of the same, right? So it's royalty, basically, right?
In a sense,
you're basically not a party to the royalty. So we are property.
We would definitely be the peasants. We would definitely
be the chattel, right? The chattel. So like I always share with people, it's like you got to think back days of the kingdoms, you know, those giant castles, and there was vast land, and then there was the peasants living out, and they would, you know,
there was a feudal system. That's what they called it.
Give what is to Caesar unto Caesar, and give what to God is God.
Yeah, everybody played
the role. You're paying your taxes, right?
Everybody played the role back then, and some people were just happy playing their role, you know, whether it was serving or whether it was being served. So,
nothing's changed really. It's just
modernized version.
Yeah, it's a modernized version.
It's been redressed.
So now this crest or this coat of arms here represents that, right?
So read the beginning. It says an act for what?
Let's see.
Because on my end, let me see if I can move my.
So it says an act for redress of inconveniences by want of proof of the deceases of persons beyond the seas or absenting themselves upon whose lives estate do depend. Recital that SESTA-KB's have gone beyond sea, and that reversioners cannot find out whether they are alive or dead. Whereas diverse lords of manors and others have granted estates by lease for one or more life or lives, or else for years determinable upon one or more life of lives, and it hath often happened that such person or persons for those life or lives, such estates have been granted, have gone beyond the seas, or so absented themselves for many years that the lessors and revisioners cannot find out whether such person or persons be alive or dead, by reason whereof such lessors or revisioners have been held out of possession or of their tenements for many years after all the lives upon which such estates depend are dead, in regard that the lessors and revisioners, when they have brought action for the recovery of their tenements, have been put upon to it to prove the death of their tenants, when it is almost impossible for them to discover the same, for remedy of which mischief so frequently happened to such lessors or revisioners.
Yeah, and so we'll have links down below so that people can check this out in its entirety themselves. But basically, at this time, from my understanding, is when I think this is the time period of the Black Plague or something serious was happening, and they ended up burning down the majority of England at the time. And for whatever reason, this was put into place. Now, whether the people were aware of what was going on and whether people are even still aware that this is an act that currently exists. It's definitely something that people need to look into. And if you're an expert in this field of the SESTA-KB Act, definitely reach out to us, because we'd like to get a way better understanding to be able to explain this, as opposed to reading it, which doesn't really make much sense to apply it to how we're trying to apply. But it's definitely applicable. It's just we need a little bit of help.
Well, yeah, when you do read, you know, even the second part in the premise behind what our layman understanding of what this is to say is that we are lost at sea, right? We are dead. We are not alive. And when you see in documents, when they use the word chattel, if you look up the word definition for chattel, let's just go ahead and go live and show the people what that means. Because when you start looking into quantum grammar and what he talks about, an article of movable personal property, a slave. Now, this is what they use in their documentation, you know.
Right.
And so if you've read it, like I've shared before, you can go to my website, bodhisattva.love, and there's The Great American Adventure by retired Judge Dale. And then there's also the Toronto Protocols. But there's other documents that I've read. If I dig them up, I'll put them on my site as well, that have this verbiage in there. And this is what we are referred to. So you can see what it says here, movable personal property. So that's where the interesting stuff comes in with Russell J. Gould as the fee for freight, where we are all property.
Mm-hmm.
And then what David Strait says is that we have to take jurisdiction all over, or
dominion over all,
dominion over all three, land, so, air, and water, where they have captured us in our name, our all capital letters name in those contracts.
Since you said it like that, you mind stop screen sharing there?
Nope.
What we are trying to do, and what we've been trying to say, is like, from all the people that we've mentioned in past videos, like David Strait, Russell J. Gould, Anna von Reitz, people like Carl Lentz, Romilly Stewart, what we're learning is, and any of these people should not take offense to what we're about to say, but I don't feel personally like any of those people have gotten it 100% right, or we would be doing those things. And I feel like all those people hold a piece of the puzzle. So we're trying to bring them together so we can learn from them. But if we can't, we're just going to have to work together and learn from each other as we're learning from these individuals and start pulling this information together so that we can figure out exactly what we need to do to no longer be a person, so that we can be the man and woman that we're supposed to be. And now, I guess fast forwarding to the United States, because it seems like a lot of stuff, we talk about corporation of the United States. They say that the country started out as a de jure nation and then eventually became a corporation. But I'm kind of confused why it started out with a president to begin with. Like, was it always a corporation? Because George Washington was a president, and presidents are only a corporation. So if somebody has more information on something like that, did the country start as a combo? Was it like a corporation and a de jure nation? I'm not sure. So I'd like to get a little bit better understanding. But it seems like, I think Abraham Lincoln was the first president that actually did what we know as executive orders. I don't think any other president had done that prior to. And there's a lot of interesting information about the history of who Abraham Lincoln is. David Strait has one kind of idea. Me and you talked about that James Rink movie, has a little bit of American history and brings up some other things that are very relevant. I think from what I can look at, the 14th Amendment is, in addition to 1930 with the birth certificate and social security number system, but the 14th Amendment, when it said that all free men and women are now called, I'm paraphrasing, of course, United States citizens.
Right.
And we've learned from David Strait, you don't want to be a citizen, a person, or a resident, CPR.
Mm-hmm.
And because a citizen puts you underneath government, municipality. And this all verbiage comes from a combination of Latin, Black Law's Dictionary, and other dictionaries that are utilized within the law system, the legal system, not the law system, the legal system, because the court systems that we deal with are all legal based, and legal is not for man or woman. Legal is not for people. legal, from what I understand, Stan, is for persons.
Corporations. The persons that they created from the birth certificate, the corporation.
And that's what we say when we're, the difference, you don't want to be a, you want to be a people. People is both singular and plural. You want to be a people, not a person. And when people are like, what do you mean? It's because a people applies to a man and woman, and person applies to a legal fiction entity, a corporate entity, the corporate you. The straw man, if you will. I mean, that's what
we're
more familiar with, the straw man term.
And you see, and we've mentioned this before, when people, you know, have done this, they've gone into a court and they've brought their birth certificate and they say, I am here on special visitation for the instrument which you are referring to, which is the birth certificate, because that's who they're talking about. And they're not talking about the flesh and blood, live, living person. It's the corporate being. There's so much to it that you have to have done your own diligence to really see all the aspects, because it's really not laid out.
But what we're providing, if you don't know what we're talking about, what we're providing is completely stuff that you can look up and fact check what we're saying. And that's where we're trying to share our research, because we are trying to coordinate all these thought leaders, and we're not having the best of luck of being able to coordinate people the way we like to. So we're taking advantage of the time and sharing what we do know or think we know, and sharing that with everybody so that we can collectively come together and work together, because ultimately it's together. It's we, the people, you know, when we stand united, when we come united. And honestly, Stan, that's why I really like the whole earthunited.global website and idea of people standing together for one truth, which is the fictitious legal system, the legal fiction. And then awarriorcause.com is definitely a good place for people to go to start getting that foundational knowledge. And I say it just like that because there's a tab called foundational knowledge that you can go through. There's a YouTube channel. It's got the playlist on there. On my YouTube channel, I got a playlist for the foundational knowledge, and it'll give you a little bit more insight onto the birth certificate system, social security number system, because this one truth affects everybody. Everybody who's born, as soon as you're born alive, you're dead on paper. And not only that, philosophically, you're already born dying, because the minute that we become alive, we start our process of dying, and ultimately throughout enough time.
Well, I mean, we die.
But literally, when you can, I mean, I'm sure you're showing a few things up, like, where they captured your soul, your feet print, where they captured your soul.
Yeah, it's hard to see, but they captured your soul, right? Your feet. They don't do that anymore, I don't think. This is a very old.
I don't know if they continue to take footprints or not, if they ask people if they want to do it. I'd like to get some clarity on the differences, because you have a birth certificate, and I have what's called a certificate of live birth.
Well, I have three totally different ones. So I've got a birth certificate, which is very ancient. That's straight from the hospital. Then you've got the Department of Vital Records. I've got a certificate of live birth and a certification of vital records. So I have three different documents.
So you got one totally from the hospital, one from the vital records, and one from, who's the other one?
Certificate of vital records in state of...
You said vital records. Vital records, hospital, and...
Yeah, so one straight from the hospital. The other one is from the state of Utah Department of Health, and the other one is...
Department of Health.
Yeah.
Okay. So the one from the hospital, the one from the hospital is your birth certificate, right?
Yep, and that is, my name is in all capital letters.
That's the only...
Just my name.
Now on...
Everything else is in...
I got to get a copy of my birth certificate and that Department of Health information, because all I have is Department of... Vital records and health statistics, and it's a certificate of live birth, and everything is, like, as I was telling you, it's spelled out in what we would consider to be proper English. People can look up the idea of capitis diminutio.
Yep, diminutio. Yeah.
And it's CAPITIS, next word, D as in dog, I, M as in Mary, I, N as in Nancy, U, T as in Tom, I, O. Capitis diminutio. And there's three different versions of it, but it talks about the use of capital letters in combination and how that works. But a lot of that's for the legal system and contracts.
It's read that definition real quick, because it's very telling.
Okay,
hold on. Not that it's basic. It just basically says that, you know, how it declares your status and the dissolving of that, basically.
Yeah, I had it pulled up. Let me see. Here it is. Okay. It says, it's a term used in Roman law referring to the extinguishing either in whole or in part of a person's former status and legal capacity. And there were three changes of state and condition attended with different consequences: maxima, media, and minima. And so you can look up this information, but it says it's used in Roman law. And as we mentioned, the corpus juris civilis, corpus juris, corpus luris, however you want to look at it, that's Roman law. The root of the law systems that are the legal systems that are being used around the world are Roman law. And people aren't getting that. You know,
people don't realize we've been under Roman rule and still are under Roman rule. Like I've said before, the Colosseums are now stadiums. You know, the just-in-time distributing food is, you keep them fed and entertained and they know none the wiser. So that's basically what we can see. If people haven't learned that yet through the whole COVID-19 thing, they've been spending a lot of time at home. They're finding out that, you know, through the sports and the entertainment world, this is how they keep you distracted from finding these things out.
That's how it's always been. You can watch a video from A Perfect Circle. It's a song called Counting Bodies Like Sheep to the Beating of a War Drum. And it talks about just like being distracted by a television while bombs are going off, you know, all around you, and you're not really paying attention because you're captivated by the entertainment that's supposed to keep you entranced. But So I do want to get people also regarding the Abraham Lincoln thing to kind of provide some more information in the Lieber Code, which LIEBER. Mm-hmm. That is that's a key to some of this, I believe. And also the Act of 1871, which is extending the territories of the District of Columbia. And that's something that me and Stan mentioned before we started recording, is that even though the United States is broken down into individual states, and those states are supposed to govern themselves, et cetera, they're still broken down of federal districts. So between something that that President Lincoln did with declaring a martial law status and the Lieber Code, and then Abraham Lincoln being assassinated in 1865, and then 1871, the Act of 1871 being introduced, which extended the territory of District of Columbia to envelop the entirety of the United States, which is how you get those federal jurisdictions. So every part of the United States, and I'm not sure the number, it might be 9, it might be 11, but there's X amount of federal jurisdictions that are broken up in territories. So you can actually look at the United States as a whole as one giant territory of the District of Columbia. And that falls under martial law, the Lieber Code. The Lieber Code took place in April 24th, 1863 as General Order Number 100. So if anybody has any more information to fill in the blanks on that, in addition to, like I said, the Act of 1871, which extends the territory of District of Columbia. So it's
and that's messy, and that's basically where you get your state of, you know, Florida, state of everything in a state.
That's when corporations officially supposedly began. But again, I question, why did we start out with President George Washington if it wasn't a corporation of sorts from the very beginning? I just don't understand that aspect, but it could have just been a title.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question.
Because we say presidents are only for corporations.
Yep.
So I don't
look
know.
At it. Look at the structure: president, vice president, treasurer, secretary. I mean, it's built up. You go start your own corporation, it comes up the same way. You know, that's how you structure it.
We pretty much have covered like most of the little stuff that, you know, I was kind of wanting to kind of touch on, which kind of got us here. You know, I mean, ultimate deal is when you go look at awarriorcause.com and what me and Stan said, it sounds like rape when we say this, but we did not consent to this. You know, when you're having to be applicable to and have to be adherent to what a contract says, you're supposed to be aware of that contract. And if it's your mother who puts you in that contract, she's supposed to be aware. But think of the birthing process and think, you know, is a woman who just gave birth who might be full of pain medications or just wore the hell down to sign a bunch of paperwork and have a complete legal understanding without having an attorney present to understand what somebody is signing. So it's a lot to think about.
How often has that happened? I mean, we really don't know. They just give you this, you know, stack of paperwork or something that it's so commonplace. It's like normal, right? Every person in that hospital is just signing away.
I was there when my daughter was born. Same thing happened. It was just like signing paperwork. You don't even think like, what am I signing? You're just like, oh, cool. My baby was born. Yay.
Yeah, exactly.
But again, why do we need proof? Why do you need a certificate showing that you were born? Like, isn't the fact that you're alive?
Well, here's what they say to do outside the system. You take a Bible and you record it yourself.
That's what was done back in the day.
On a blank page, you just record that birth. Or if you get married, same thing. You just record it. You do your own recording. Now that you've done it with a certificate or a registry, you've now registered with the state and created a corporation which has a bond that gets traded on the New York Stock Exchange. And they're...
Now, there you go. Hold on.
Creating value.
Before we wrap things up, CUSIP numbers.
Yep.
If anybody knows
CUS,
how to look
CUSIP.
Up CUSIP. If anybody
if there's knows any brokers
numbers, if you're a broker, is there a secret system? Is there a different CUSIP number system than what I can look up? Because I'm understanding that all 9-digit numbers that are listed on things like our birth certificate, our live certificate of birth, our social security card, and lots of different other things, your bank account, count the numbers, 99999. You'll see it.
It's on a dollar bill. Number.
And CUSIP numbers are numbers of items that are listed on exchanges to be traded. So that's apparently what's going on. And I'd like to actually be able to have some proof of the system. You know, because when you say this to some people, they might think you're a little bit crazy. You know, when you say, hey, you know, apparently we're all lost at sea and don't know our name. And yeah, and we're illiterate. And that's the thing that's got me is as intelligent as I thought I have been in my lifetime to realize that I've been conditioned. They've totally conditioned me. I'm illiterate. I don't understand half of what's written down when it comes to the fact that what we say in normal conversation doesn't mean the same things in the legal system inside of a court.
Okay, I found it.
Look at that. That's a huge magnifying glass.
Check this out.
Put that in front of your face on camera. That's crazy.
All right, check this out. Remember I was looking for it? Okay, yeah. So this is the one for certification of vital record. Now, I had to get out my magnifying glass. On the very bottom left, this is what I was trying to find with you earlier. It says Midwest Banknote Company on the very bottom left.
Is that your live certificate of birth?
This is the one that says certification of vital record from the state of Utah. And it's got like this fancy, It's got this fancy stuff on the, you know, around the edges.
Yeah,
looks like a dollar bill, actually.
Yeah, mine's not nowhere near that fancy.
Well, I've got three different ones, and they all don't say it. Let me see if this one says it. I knew I saw that before.
Yeah, mine on the back of it says something about the type of paper that it was printed on, which is like century something. I'm going to pull it up. I'm 45, so, and I realized I do need to get some reading glasses. Mm-hmm. Everybody's like, you're not 45. Well, just so everybody knows, Stan's older than me. I can't quite make out the first word, but it's like something, it may be Premier Hill Century Safety, Premier something Century Safety. I know Century is like a company that makes safes as well. So maybe they've made some sort of security paper, but there's no actual writing. It's just like an ink stamp that's in between some of the designs. But I'm definitely going to get in touch with my hospital and find out what.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Nothing
five,
says
six,
a tradable.
Okay, so I do have nine digits and a barcode on the bottom of that same one, but the different one is how we're talking about the CUSIP number. So I've got it in red, and this is what we were used to seeing, is it's got, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 but it's just what happened.
Yeah, but I think where you have eight digits, I think that there's a zero behind it. I know that might sound to other people like, oh, you guys are just grasping for straws, but I think that there's a method to that because the CUSIP numbers are eight digits. So when you write down a dollar figure, you don't write down all the zeros behind it. If you write down $22, you should.
Do you have a dollar on you right now? Do you have any kind of note, Federal Reserve note on you? Just to show the numbers.
Well, I think they all, even the silver certificates, have the same thing. Are you talking about the number that's on it?
Yeah.
That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, including a letter. So it's 1, 2, 3. Yeah, it's 8 numbers. I've got a silver certificate, and it's not a Federal Reserve note, but it doesn't say Treasury note on it either. Yeah, it does. Hold on. It says this certificate. That
this is sad, we don't have cash flows.
That there is something deposit in the Treasury of the United States of America, so it's a Treasury note. Let me, no, I don't, but
isn't it interesting though that it says,
I don't like
on this
fiat
one,
money,
it says Midwest Bank Note Company. So,
well, Midwest,
why would this
that would be a security paper, and that's why, like, a security meaning like a tradable commodity.
Well, then. That there you go. I mean,
right, so but again, you know, someone's going to say, well, what does that mean? And then, you know, I would like to actually be able to talk to somebody who I can give to them some CUSIP numbers that would relate back to who I am individually and tell me what the hell it says, because can I invest and trade against myself?
Well, there are people already are, apparently.
So I'd like to know.
Against your corporation.
Now, apparently, you know, when people will talk about this straw man thing and creditor accounts or whatever people want to refer to this thing as, whether or not it's available to people, that's not our goal with this. That would be kind of like icing on the cake. Just being free would be eating the cake itself. That's why we're titling this series Freedom and Liberty. And not okay, so justice. Justice is a legal term.
Check this out. Let's see here. Midwest Bank Note Company manufactures certificates, founded in 1956, has dedicated, well, there's another one, but this redemption service says how sovereignty was lost in America, the redemption services. That's another link. But this might be something interesting too. Check
so
out.
This is what we do. This is what we research and we share information. So we figured it's time to like really kind of summarize a little bit of it and put it together for what we know.
Let's read what they do. Products and services, manufacturers, certificate of origin, manufacturers, statements of origin, certificates of origin, statements of origin, title documents, certificates of title, certificates, stock certificate printing. Certificate printing, banknote paper, banknote printing, security paper, safety paper, and so on, bonds printing. So there you go. I mean, if that doesn't tell you, it's printed on security paper, security note. It's a banknote.
Live certificate of birth.
And it's just
and
this
I have
one.
A century-made thing that was on there.
I'm wondering, because this is the most recent one that I have. The others are older. And this one doesn't have, the one that has the banknote on there does not have the CUSIP number. But the other one I have from the Department of Health does have it. And it's two letters and then six numbers after. But the barcode could be the replacement for that. Maybe, maybe not. I'm totally guessing.
Century safety.
Because the file number is different from the barcode number. But you guys, we encourage you to look at yours and see if you have, if you look with it, you may need a magnifying glass. It's very fine print, the bottom left of my vital records. And you can see if yours say that, but that's pretty telling in itself right there that this document is a banknote. So that would add the validity. I knew I'd seen that before. Let's see.
Yeah, when you research stuff, like I just saw like a link that came up, sometimes you get the most craziest stuff coming up. So I would just encourage people, if you just like to entertain yourself with some things, sometimes you can look up some things and you see other things and they just make you say, is this
you know, an inter-
really
yeah, you
living?
Know, Right. You know, one interesting to look up is if you look up timeline of like taxes, like the IRS, you look up the timeline, everything happened after the 1930s.
Well, even the creation of, because the IRS was created as the entity that became the IRS had a different name, and I can't remember what it was called, but it was the basis of the company. It was based in like Puerto Rico, and at the time that was, you know, it was a U.S. Yep. territory.
Yep.
So, and there was a lot of legal things that were going on with Puerto Rico. I mean, up until like really this year, they made it real easy for people to go and move there and be able to take advantage of all the tax break benefits. So if you live in Puerto Rico right now, or before this year, you were there, you were getting a lot of breaks on, like, I think there was like zero or very, very little tax on capital gains. So someone like Mike Maloney, he actually lives in Puerto Rico because he can save a lot of money by not having to pay those capital gains taxes for a lot of his investment and tradings and things. But I guess we'll get ready to wrap things up. We wanted to kind of keep this as short as possible and continue the series. Was there anything else that I didn't touch on or that we didn't touch on that you wanted to bring up before we wrap up?
I just want to be clear. So I was just looking at that IRS timeline. It's taxes and revolution was the revolutionary was 1776.
Yeah, it was created by Abraham Lincoln, if I'm not mistaken, or maybe before that, but it wasn't utilized. It wasn't until 1913 with the creation of the Federal Reserve that they started doing taxation of labor, and then the IRS was created out of that. So you can look at 1913 and the Federal Reserve Act, and also look at the act that incorporated the taxation of labor, because that was supposed to be something that was unconstitutional. We weren't supposed to be taxed on our labor. We were supposed to be taxed on goods and services, not for the hard
capital gains.
Yeah. Not for the hard work that we do. So like when somebody goes and does a job, you shouldn't technically be working. Out of 12 months, you're working 3 to 4 months, if not more, for the government. You know, a third to a fourth of your time of work goes to the government. And that's not what your founding fathers fought for, to get away from the British system or whatever we did or didn't do as far as getting away. But it's time to correct that. That's what we're trying to do, is like wake people up, build numbers. Because we said it, united we stand, divided we fall. And we need to pull all these different people together and under that one truth, this legal fiction system that affects us all, that as soon as we are born, we are dead on paper. As soon as you are born, you are dead on paper. So, I mean, go to awarriorcause.com because it really spells out a lot of information. I'm going to talk Stan into creating the playlist for foundational knowledge on his channel as well. I've got it on my channel. Again, if you're watching this on Stan's channel, make sure you're checking out my channel, Rice Crypto. If you're watching this on my channel, make sure you're checking out Stan's channel, Bodhisattva Love. So any final words?
No, just finals. Well, do your own diligence. Please look into this stuff for yourself, and you may or may not like what you find, but at least you know the truth of what we're talking about.
Truth hurts, but as G.I. Joe said so elegantly in all of the cartoons I used to watch, knowing is half the battle.
Half the battle.
So this conversation will be continued to everybody. This is all about freedom and liberty.
Cheers.